And welcome back to the Social Contrast Commander podcast. I'm Mike Allman, and joining me is my co-host Alex Lupp. Alex, it's been a bit. It's been a long time, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing all right, Mike. Happy to be here. We are recording these back to back.
Yep.
Not sure if they're going to end up getting released back to back. I guess we'll have to see.
That's the goal.
That's the goal. And last episode, we talked about the 99. We're still going to talk about the 99. But last episode, we talked about white, blue, and black. This episode, we're going to talk about red.
Yep.
And colorless and multicolored, and I'm not skipping any colors of any kind.
Wait, what do you mean?
Well, there's white, then blue, then black, then red.
Yep.
And then colorless and multicolored, right?
Well, there's five colors.
What are you talking about? There's five colors.
So there's green.
What? Well, the thing is, Mike, just incidentally, without trying to do any shenanigans, it turns out there weren't that many monogreen cards in this set. And of the monogreen cards that were first printed in this set, obviously, there's some reprints that are just great. But of the cards that were printed in this set initially, none of them are cards that I selected to talk about. Nothing against green. Green's doing great. We just didn't end up with any of those cards in this set review.
If you're listening, just so you can tune up your Multani or your Yeva or...
Well, we're going to be talking about some green cards. Yeah. They just won't be mono green.
Right. Exactly. Our mono green only players, hey, if you got to skip out for an episode, don't, because we're still going to talk about artifacts.
We're going to talk about some great cards, colorless cards that go in your green deck.
There you go. But that said, this is the Doctor Who set. There's a lot going on in this set. We're going to finish the 99.
We've had so much fun so far, and we're going to just keep going. So much fun stuff in this set, Mike. We've had a great, great selection. And moving into red, let's see if that continues here.
Yeah, I'm going to, speaking of moving, I'm going to move my head 90 degrees so I can read our first card here. We've got Coward and Killer. It's one of those cool cards that's two cards on the same card, but not one that you have to flip. So we start with Coward, one in a red for a sorcery. Target creature can't block this turn and becomes a coward in addition to its other types until end of turn. Time travel. Okay. Reiterate, time travel for when you cast the spell, when you do the thing. All cards that you have in suspend with some kind of time counter on it, you can choose to add one or remove one. Cool. I got that right on the first try?
Close enough. It's cards that you control or cards that you own in exile that have any number of time counters on them. You may either add or remove one.
Fair enough. So that's Coward. You're going to make something.
We've seen that sort of coward thing before, but we also have another card on this card.
Why don't you go for the next
one? Okay, we also got Killer.
I like that.
Which is a 2 red-red. That's 4 mana for a sorcery. Killer deals 3 damage to target creature and each other creature that shares a creature type with it.
Yikes!
So Typal decks are getting hosed. A lot of token decks getting hosed. Now, this is something to keep in mind because we are going to talk about a couple of these split cards.
We'll call
them. Some of them have Fuse. This one does not have Fuse. So when you cast this spell, you are going to choose one or the other. You will either choose Coward or Killer. You cannot choose both unless you get this back to your hand and cast it again.
Okay. Cool. I mean, the idea of, okay, great, I'm going to make something not be able to block as a sorcery is nice. 2 mana is not too bad. And then the time travel playing. Yeah, that's pretty cool. The killer part is the best part by far. Holy cow. I'm going to do 3 damage to every creature that shares a type.
You're playing against elves. Screw the elves. They're gone. You're playing against somebody who just made a bunch of tokens. Most of the time when somebody makes a bunch of tokens, they'll all share a type.
Yep.
So those are all screwed.
This is rough. That's a good card.
I would think of this as really like a modal spell.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. Do I need to really get in for the damage on this turn? Or do I really need to try and wipe a whole bunch of things all at the same time? Pretty cool.
Yeah, we've got some interesting options there. Let's keep it rolling here.
We have Day of the Moon!
Yeah.
2 in a red for a saga. There are three chapters. They are all the same chapter.
Yes, they are.
This is very cool. Choose a creature card name. Then go to all creatures with the name chosen for Day of the Moon. So, that's pretty cool as far as, okay, I'm going to choose a creature card name, and it could be Warrior Token. Or, you know, it could be a commander.
You'll choose the name Warrior, because for the most part, largely, when a token is made, that token's name is equal to its token card types. Now, it's not a card, but you make a soldier, an elf soldier, it's going to have the types elf and soldier, and it will have the name elf soldier. And that is a valid name to choose.
Great. So all of those are goated.
Although choose a creature card name.
Yeah.
Might have to choose a not token.
Fair enough. Well, that being the case, point is that this is a repeatable goad.
Yes.
Because after you've done this the first time, the second time you do it, you're going to goad something else more likely than
that. Goad them again as well.
But everything that you've goaded prior to that is going to be goaded again with this card. That's pretty cool.
This
I like
is nice
that.
Because it's a saga.
Yeah.
But it's not, you don't have to wait for its value to accumulate, although it does accumulate in value.
Right.
It's not like, oh, if this doesn't get to chapter three, then I'm screwed. That doesn't happen with this one. And this actually is portraying, we have this silence, and you can actually see these tally counters that I was talking about earlier. When they see the silence, they write it on their body so that they remember they saw it.
It's very cool. As far as a 3 mana for a goat effect that is, you know, on its own kind of repeatable, is pretty cool.
This is an interesting one.
Go ahead.
Ensnared by the Mara. This is 2 red. It's 4 mana for a sorcery. Each opponent faces a villainous choice. Here we go, baby. They exile cards from the top of their library until they exile a non-land card. Then you may cast the card without paying its mana cost. That is all one option.
Yep.
Second option. Or that player exiles the top 4 cards of their library and ensnared by the Mara, deals damage equal to the total mana value of those exiled cards to that player.
Wow.
So you either get an Atali, or you get, I forget, there's definitely a spell that's...
there's a couple of them.
Yeah, there's a couple of them. But this is so, so cool. Each opponent is going to have to make that call, assuming that they don't know what's on top of their library, which usually they won't. Are you going to get a non-land card for free, or are they going to hit themselves for a pseudo-random amount of damage?
Right.
Which could be, you know, very little. They draw a bunch of lands, now it's 0.
Right.
Or they could hit a bunch of beaters, now they lose like 10, 20 life.
But the other part of it is that you're not drawing any of those things. You're exiling those cards. So if
they don't get those either.
Right. If there was top deck manipulation, great. I'm even more excited.
Do a little psychic surgery.
Oh, did you tutor something to the top of your deck? Great. I would like to choose you.
I hope you didn't tutor a high mana value card.
Yeah.
Or something that I would want.
Or something that you would want, right? So
right.
It doesn't matter.
Very cool.
They're not going to get it either way. Because you're exiling
that's,
it.
Yeah. Game over for that.
So let's see. Average... Say the average mana cost of a deck is like 3. It's probably 2
right.
and a half,
well, it,
3.
When we talk about what the average mana value of a deck is, or the deck CMC, that almost always excludes lands.
Right.
Because if we counted lands, every deck's mana value would be like 1.
Sure.
Because lands are 0.
Right. So average CMC, mana value, whatever. Call it 2.5 to 3. Typically, we recommend, the kind of standard is like somewhere between like 34 and 38 lands, depending on what you're running, stuff like that. Okay, great.
I tend to err higher.
Yeah, and so do I.
Yeah.
But if this on average is, hey, I'm going to do 5 damage to 8 damage if you do this and exile
and also
some
you
stuff,
lose the top 4 cards of your library.
Or I'm going to cast something for free off of your deck. That's pretty good for 4 mana.
Yeah, this is not nothing. It's very chaotic. I think this slaps right into chaos decks, but it could also slot into decks that want to punish people for either being greedy with their decks, or maybe you have my kind of decks, like a Silver Bullet deck, where you would want to do something like somebody tutors to top of library or tucks right at the top of their library, and you say, no, you don't get that ever again.
No, I like cards that are... they're counter tutors without stopping the tutor. It's just great.
I'd like very interesting card there, Mike.
Why don't you tell me about our next card here?
Yeah, we got Impending Flux, which is 2 and a red, 3 mana total for a sorcery with Paradox, which is an ability word. It's not complicated, and we're not really going to go into it because it doesn't really mean anything. It just involves, you know, doing a certain number of things based on the number of spells that have been cast, and it could be anything. So it says Paradox, Impending Flux deals X damage to each opponent and each creature they control, where X is 1 plus the number of spells they've cast from anywhere other than your hand this turn. I think I just butchered that. X is 1 plus the number of spells you've cast from anywhere other than your hand this turn. Right. So if you've cast from the command zone, if you cast from your graveyard, if you've cast from exile, for example, with Suspend, which is mostly what this refers to, or if you've cast from your library, which some cards can do, it's going to deal that much damage plus 1. And it also has Foretell, Mike. Foretell for 1 double red, which is 3 mana, the same mana cost. During your turn, you may pay 2 generic and exile this card from your hand face down. Cast it on a later turn for its Foretell cost. This is a sorcery, so you will need to cast it on one of your later turns during one of your main phases. We kind of low-key love Foretell.
Foretell's awesome. It's a rattlesnake without being a rattlesnake.
What's going on here?
Here's the thing. This turns into a... If you Foretell this card, which I'd assume that you would, unless you're going against someone that is specifically doing a token deck, and those tokens are 1/1s for the most part, you Foretell this card, great. Now whenever you cast this card, it's definitely going to do 2 damage. Right?
That's a good point, because you're casting it from exile.
So if I do this for 3 mana on a later turn, cool. If I do this on a later turn... While I've also cast my commander, great, now it's doing 3 damage, because commander itself, the foretelled card, and plus 1.
But if you're casting it into a suspend type of
deck, you can...
Or maybe a graveyard.
Exactly. This is narrow as all get out if you're going going that way. If you read this as pay 3 mana, do 1 damage to all creatures an opponent control, or to each opponent and each creature they control, or pay 2 mana now and 3 mana later, do 2 damage to each opponent and each creature they control. By itself, that's not too bad.
If you're in a meta, and everybody's meta is different, where people like to play a lot of weenies or maybe tokens, doing 2 to everything, that could almost wipe the board, at least for one player.
It's not a huge investment of mana or time. So it's not one of those things where I'm going to Foretell this card and everybody knows what it is so they can prep for it. Great, here's my trap card that I'm going to activate later.
Well, in Joyra and in any kind of suspend deck, this is gangbusters. This is just value.
Yeah. What this is trying to do in this set, this is really cool. Outside of this set, it's still usable, and that's pretty neat. Yeah.
It's pretty narrow, but it does definitely have its uses.
Memory Worm, 1 and a red for a 1/1 alien worm. Why am I getting all the aliens? This is weird.
I don't know, Mike. I guess you just love worms and aliens.
Sure. Also has Paradox, but completely different. Whenever you cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand, Memory Worm deals 2 damage to target player. That player discards a card, then draws a card. Put a +1/+1 counter on Memory Worm. Okay.
We got some group
stuff. We're going to rewind this a bit. Whenever you cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand, all of the stuff that we just said about the previous cards, boom.
Yep. Spend, Command Zone, Foretell, Reanimation.
Does 2 damage to target player. Cool. That's fine. That player then loots, they discard a card and then draw a card, and then this worm gets bigger.
I think that's rummage.
Right? You're right.
So that's even worse.
That's weird, though. This is kind of a cool card as far as...
It's going to churn that value out, right? If you're in the kind of deck that does this in a suspend type of deck, this is going to churn that value out, and people are going to hate you, Mike.
It depends on how often you're doing it, I guess. Because
I would assume somewhat often, unless you're not really running.
Right? Whenever you cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand, Prosper is real big about doing stuff from exile, stuff like that. There's cards where this fits pretty well, but the effect is it's innocuous. It is I'm going to do 2 damage to a player, and then they're going to discard and draw a card. Some players are going to be all for it. Hey, could you? I'll take 2 damage. I need to try and get a little bit further in my deck. Okay, great. Put a +1/+1 counter on my worm. Okay. Eventually, if this turns into a 5-5, that's pretty cool.
Giving me like scavenging ooze a little bit, right? It's just turning that value slowly.
Little bit. It's not crazy, but it is a cool effect that I like that they built out. Yeah,
absolutely. Let's move on to Suntaran General.
Okay.
Which is 4 and a red for a creature soldier alien soldier.
Hey.
It has trample and haste. And battalion, which is another ability word. Not really going to get into it because ability words don't really mean anything. Whenever Suntaran General and at least 2 other creatures attack, for each opponent, goad up to 1 target creature that player controls. Those creatures can't block this turn.
I like that.
Wow. That's a new wrinkle in the goad, right? Because one way that you might want to avoid having to attack with a creature, maybe you would do something to it. Maybe you block with it. I don't know. There's avenues that this locks out.
Yeah.
That you would normally look when you're getting goaded to maybe escape down that way. And this is no. You have to attack and it can't block.
And just as importantly, this is 5 mana, okay?
Yes.
It's not a small cost, but it's 5/5. It's repeatable and it has haste. This is not a prepare for it spell. This is a
trample. This beats in.
Yeah. 5/5 trample haste. Like.
Yeah, this is not nothing.
I dig this card a lot. I have to have at least 2 other creatures attacking for this to be used.
That's not a big deal.
Okay, sure. Like, that's fine. I like this guy a lot. Also,
and it says for each opponent up to 1 target creature that player controls. So the value is good. And the great thing about it is that you're sort of creating these lines right off the bat. If you want to goad something nice and big, something juicy, mm-hmm. well, that big juicy thing that maybe has a lot of power and toughness also can't be a blocker for the other thing you just goaded.
Right. Exactly. I love the idea of, and I think that's where the trample comes into play with this thing too. Because if I attack with a 5/5 and the person that I'm attacking, they've got a 2/2 and they've got a 8/8 something crazy. I definitely don't want that coming my way. Cool.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to goad that thing. And then you can choose to block this 2/2, or you can choose this 2/2 to block. Your 8/8 can't. And I'm going to trample in and hit you for the other 3 damage anyway. So do you want to lose a creature, take 3, and have something goaded? Or do you just want to take 5 and this other thing is goaded? It's very cool. I like that.
I think it'd be cool just to make a goad force combat deck. I mean, it definitely exists at this point, and you probably have a lot of great choices too. Goad has become a great boon to us, right? As if not an evergreen keyword, it feels like at this point definitely a deciduous keyword. We've just been seeing goad so often over the past few years, and I'm here for it, Mike.
Yeah. Oh no, for sure. I've got a Phantas deck, and it.
Yes.
It's just worked its way into being a goad deck specifically because, I mean, Phantas is encouraging combat all the time, but now I'm just going to try and make people point the owies a little bit less at me. And that's...
Exactly.
It makes sense. Why don't you talk to me about our next saga here?
Yeah, the Parting of Ways, which is a 4 red, 6 mana for an enchantment saga. And it has 3 chapters. First chapter, exile the top 5 cards of your library. For each non-land card exiled this way, put a number of time counters on that card equal to its mana value. Okay. If it doesn't have suspend, it gains suspend. Juicy stuff there, Mike.
Yeah.
Chapter 2, time travel. You're going to do 2 time travels on chapter 2.
Which means on your next upkeep, you're going to be removing 3 counters from these things, potentially.
Potentially. Chapter 3, for each opponent, destroy up to 1 target artifact that player controls. That's just good value, Mike.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to hit chapter 3, but if it does, I like that value.
Right. The point of this is to get a bunch of stuff happening next turn. And that's fine.
Chapter 1 being the most explosive chapter, I think that's a good mark for a saga to have.
Mm-hmm.
And then chapter 2, if it survives to chapter 2, all of that stuff is effectively 2 mana value less for the purposes of its suspend.
Right.
And
if you're in a deck where suspend is a big thing for you, and frankly, it should be if this is what you're doing, but even if you're not, this is still a pretty good card. But
now,
if you whiff on the first chapter, you get 1 You get one thing that you get.
That'd be unfortunate.
That would be unfortunate. But if you're playing a deck that's trying to manipulate around the suspend mechanic, or, you know, that's not bad as far as, okay, great, I didn't get what I wanted, but at least I'm still going to next turn time travel, time travel. It's pretty neat.
Now, there's this interesting wrinkle we haven't really discussed about this idea of putting time counters on to a card with suspend,
right,
or removing time counters from a card with vanishing. You can do that, but you wouldn't normally want to. But there are some interesting reasons why you might want to. A card comes to mind. Let me see if I can pull this card up.
Sure.
But basically, it's a very, very cheap red creature. I think it's like...
Oh, it's suspend some, for it's a single suspend, mana. Yeah, suspend one.
And every time it's like you 13 remove or a time counter, you get to... You can like sacrifice things. So potentially... You have a sac outlet in exile that can't be interacted with. Now, it's possible that you just want to leave that card in suspension indefinitely and you never want it to hit the field because then it's just a big body and you just want it to be your permanent sac outlet that nobody's allowed to touch. These things do exist. They're niche, but they're out there.
Yeah, there's... suspend is one of those cool mechanics that you have to build around it. For the most part, for it to be really effective, you could do it as a like standalone card in a couple of things. But the whole point, like, oh, I'm going to manipulate a whole bunch of stuff to make it go faster or slower to wait. It's a reverse tempo kind of thing. So the idea of hey, we've made a new keyword that cares about suspend type effects. It's pretty cool. You mentioned Goad being something that is big. Are at least growing in interest in table mechanics and sets and things.
I would
like
say
that.
So.
Let's continue with that. The Sound of Drums.
Wow.
Two in a red for an enchantment aura. Enchant creature. Enchanted creature is goaded. We love that. If enchanted creature would deal combat damage to a permanent or player, it deals double that damage instead. That would be pretty cool all by itself.
But it keeps going.
Two in a red. Return the Sound of Drums from your graveyard to your hand.
Oh, hello, Red Rancor.
Love that.
What did you get
Love
here?
That. I would like to make this thing
oh my gosh,
hurt
Mike.
More, hurt other people, and if they get rid of the thing, I would like the thing back, please.
Even before getting into the value, we've talked about this. The big downside of auras, the thing it's enchanting goes away, so does it. It also goes away, and that just sucks. You get two for one, or even three for one. But being able to bring it back to your hand
it's very
and
cool.
then cast it again... Ooh, that's recurrable effect, Mike. And it's not just, oh, you know, you goaded something cool, whatever. Yawn. Goad and double damage.
It makes me sad that the Sound of Drums is a bad thing. Because I like drums. Drums are great. But I get it. Maybe it's war drums. I don't know. I'm showing
my
ignorance.
This is basically it's mind control.
Okay.
Right.
Got it. Man, that's very cool though, as far as a I'm a pump up the thing that's attacking
card.
Everybody else. Because here's the... Okay. I love these kind of effects because I pump up somebody else's creature effectively.
Yes.
Okay. What is the bigger threat at that point? The creature or the enchantment that's on the creature?
Well, if you hit the creature, you hit both.
Yeah.
But...
Here's
the problem. Yeah. Even if you do hit the Sound of Drums, the aura, that doesn't matter because it's still in the graveyard. You can bring it back to your hand with the activated ability.
Exactly.
So it doesn't even matter. I mean, I think at that point you have to hit the creature so you get the
extra value.
Not a two for one per se, but at least you get a one for one. Otherwise, you two for one yourself.
Right. And that's where I like this card. Where hey, this is three mana. This is three mana and says remove target creature. As far as I'm concerned, remove target creature.
Well, what I like about you could use this. Normally, you wouldn't want to goad your own things necessarily, but in this case, if you goaded your own thing, now it also deals double damage.
Yep.
Maybe your commander deals double damage.
Another one of those high floor, high ceiling cards that isn't crazy expensive.
Very, very cool effect. Mike.
That's red. Red's pretty dope.
That's red. What did we? Well, let's move.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah, we'll move on. Let's go to colorless.
Yes, colorless.
Do you want to start with the land, or do you want to do the land last?
I mean, I think we'll just kind of do... let's do the land first,
okay.
Then. How about that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Ominous Cemetery, because why not? So, land, tap to add a colorless mana, or You can pay 5, tap it, and exile Ominous Cemetery. Target creature's owner shuffles it into their library.
Wow.
That's utility on a land.
I think some people look at that cost and they chafe, right? Because that's 6 mana equivalent. That's high.
Sure.
But this is a land, yeah. Mike. This is a land, and you're not destroying, you're tucking.
This is a land that doesn't come into play tacked or anything either. And again, it's useful in the meantime.
I think this might find a way into Emrakul at some point.
It should find a way into a lot of colorless decks.
This is so nice. Now, there's I play a land in Emrakul that allows me to bounce a creature back to my hand on my turn. And you wouldn't think that that'd be a lot of value, especially with that. But with Emrakul, it's great. And then with this, we've talked about getting around Indestructible. Mm-hmm. This gets around Indestructible, gets shuffled into the library. If it's their commander, they need to then make that snap decision. I need to put this in my command zone almost certainly, because otherwise I might never see it again.
Right. And let's, leaning into the colorless portion of it as far as we possibly can, talk to me about all of the targeted removal spells in colorless, and then tell me how much they cost.
That's the funny thing about it, right? Is that usually we do have removal in colorless, but it costs barely any more than this, or maybe the same amount as this. We have a couple of spot removal spells that that exile in colorless, and we have a couple of board wipes, but they tend to be very, very expensive. And the funny thing, Mike, is that I don't even think this is more expensive than most of them.
No, you're losing a land. That's what you got. That's the bigger cost that you're dealing
also
with.
Also, just putting it out there, I mean, if you are in colorless, maybe you're in Eldrazi. Maybe you're running an Eldrazi processor and you can bring this back from exile.
Oh, there you go. Heck. Okay. I wasn't thinking about that. That's terrifying. Cool.
Very cool land. Very cool. I like it. Let's talk about some artifacts.
Yeah, I know this one. The Laser Screwdriver. 3 mana for an artifact. Tap it to add 1 mana of any color. Okay, so 3 mana mana rock. That's not bad. Not ideal, but it's okay. But then it's doing the, you know...
we've got some trading post action.
Yeah,
here,
I was going to say, insert random artifact that does five things.
We've got
things
some,
here.
What's it called?
The Staff of something.
Staff of Domination or something.
So for 1 mana, you can tap the Laser Screwdriver to tap target artifact. It's pretty cool.
Okay, yeah.
2 mana to tap it, and you can surveil one. Look at the top card of your library, and then put that card in your graveyard. Okay, so decent filtering, things like that. And you can pay 3 to tap it and goad target creature. So,
yeah.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
It is, and it's also a mana.
That's what I was leaning into, where it's like, hey.
That's a high floor.
That's the worst case scenario is that it's a worse Arcane Signet. Okay, that's fine. Oh, no. What else can it do? Oh, it can tap other artifacts.
It can also do 3 other things that you might need at any time.
Right.
But maybe those things aren't commonplace enough that you would be willing to dedicate a whole card to it. Well, that's why we have this very modal card, and we're going to have another one very similar to this, because, Mike, this is actually not the screwdriver that you might be familiar with. This would be the Laser Screwdriver, which would be the Master Screwdriver. But we're also going to talk about, and we might just
go ahead on to it right now,
the Sonic Screwdriver, which is the much more famous Doctor's multi-tool that, let's be honest, it can do anything that the plot requires it to do. It's a magical device. Sonic Screwdriver's for 3 generic mana. It's an artifact.
Okay.
And it has tap, add 1 mana of any color. So right off the bat, great stuff.
Yeah.
But this is almost like a foil to the other one. We also have some more activated abilities. For 1 in tap, we have untap another target artifact. Ooh-hoo-hoo.
Yeah.
Maybe some mana rocks, maybe some big.
Oh, yeah. No, this is terrifying.
Yeah. Very, very nice there. We also have pay 2 tap and scry 1, which I think is a little bit worse than Surveil, but it's still good.
Really? Because I was going to say the exact opposite.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like Surveil has a better value because if it goes in the bottom of your library, you probably never see it again.
Yeah.
For the most
part. You have to be playing in a deck that cares about graveyard manipulation for Surveil to be good to me.
I would say that's... Yeah, I mean, you could make an argument either way. Surveil and Scry, both very similar effects. It also has pay 3 and tap target creature can't be blocked this turn.
Gross!
Oh my. Ooh. Ooh. Are we doing Rogue's Passage up
basically,
in here?
Basically. But, oh man.
Mike.
I like this.
These two cards. You know, like, obviously these individual abilities, maybe they're a little overcosted, maybe they're a little bit narrow, but when you have all of them, and you can make this choice whenever you need to, and even if you don't want any of those, you can still tap it for mana. Between Sonic and Laser Screwdriver, these are some great modal value.
I mean, one mana, tap target artifact. Okay. One mana,
untap target artifact.
Untap target. Yeah.
Well, you just made mana with Soul Ring and any other artifact that goes positive. Yeah,
Sonic, or does something nuts, right? Like, Sonic Screwdriver, anytime that you... When I have a card that says very, very minimal amount of investment, untap blank, my brain says, oh, this is something that's a combo piece. It's a problem. By itself.
It could be, yeah.
It's a problem.
Now, unlike Staff of Domination, you cannot put mana into it to untap itself. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a one-stop shop combo
finish. It's an enabler. But it could. It's not
it could combo off. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
It's something that satisfies the need for something else to do what you need. But, like you said, the floor being it's a 3-mana rock. Not bad. The upside of, I didn't actually put this in here for this, but it would be cool if this creature can't be blocked and it kills this player. Okay, go ahead. Boop.
If Manalith weren't already dead, which obviously it is and has been,
sure.
But even if it weren't already dead, there are a bunch of 3-mana rocks that, in addition to competing with the 2-mana rocks, which I think, as a whole, our format has... undergone a major tectonic shift towards
must go faster cost, must go faster
just in general but now those 3-mana rocks have to compete with all of the modal value on these. I don't know if most of them can. Now Chromatic Lantern I think is a league of its own, but the rest of them are going to have some trouble, Mike.
Yeah, for sure. Now the Screwdrivers are pretty good. Moving on,
let's keep going.
Midnight Crusader Shuttle, 4-mana for an artifact vehicle 3/4 that has Midnight Entity. Whenever Midnight Crusader Shuttle attacks, defending player faces a villainish choice. We love those words.
We love it.
That player sacrifices a creature, or you gain control of a creature of your choice that player controls until end of turn. If you gain control of a creature this way, tap it, and it's attacking that player, and it has crew 2.
Wow. So we've definitely seen things that enter the battlefield attacking. Mm-hmm. We've seen that before. And we know those don't count as having had attacked.
Yep.
Now, I don't know if we've ever seen I steal this from you and now it's instantly attacking you.
Or that you blow it up.
Or you blow it. Yeah, that, ooh. But you gain control of it temporarily so you can sacrifice it for value. Well, maybe even after you swing in, you can sacrifice it for value.
Does anybody else hear? Who's is that? Brian Stoutarms music? Burr, burr,
burr, burr. Oh my god! Off the top,
immediately rope. Going in that deck. And here's the thing: wow, what value? It's a lot of it's a decent amount of hoops. Don't get me wrong, but it's still fun. 4-mana, 3/4, crew 2. That's not bad. I wish it was.
Give it to me, or you lose.
Right. Well, here's the thing. Depending on, you still have to be smart with your attacks, right? Because you don't get to choose the creature that's sacrificed. You only get to choose the creature you get to take control of if they do that. So you tack into somebody and they say, okay, great, I'm going to get rid of this thing. Well, all right, I guess I got some value. But the idea of, hey, sacrifice something that you care about, or I'm going to take something you care about and attack you with it, and then probably figure out a way to sack it myself.
Yeah, probably second.
That's pretty cool. I like that as a concept for a card.
Yeah, this is just a really neat artifact. Let's move on to River Song's Diary. Mm-hmm. Tamiyo's Journal, 3-mana for an artifact. Although I think this is more like a different artifact.
Yeah.
Maybe a little more knowledge pooly. It has imprint. Whenever a player casts an instant or sorcery spell from their hand, exile it instead of putting it into the graveyard as it resolves. So they still get it, but then it becomes property of Riversong's Diary. Yep. At the beginning of your upkeep, if there are 4 or more cards exiled with Riversong's Diary, choose one of them at random. You may cast it without paying its mana cost.
It's pretty cool.
Knowledge pool. It's giving me knowledge pool. Now, this is only for you.
It's only for you. It's a
very private diary.
And it's 3-mana. Which makes sense.
Flavorfully, it's a diary. It's for you. this is really going to have, I think, a chilling effect on the board that people are not going to want to cast instants and sorceries, Mike, because if they do, they're going to give them to me.
Well, it'd have to be a lot, though, right?
They have to do it four times.
You have to get four different instants or sorcery spells from their hand.
Although you can feed this. Yep. You can feed it your own spells.
Yep, it's a player. I do love the idea of somebody casting a counterspell and then you whiffing and getting a counterspell at your upkeep on nothing. That's fun.
That's not great.
But stuff like that. It's three mana. This isn't a crazy investment. And, you know,
it's chaotic.
Four cards sounds like a lot. But, I mean, that could be an...
It's across the whole
table. That's easily one turn around the table. Right?
Yes, that could happen.
Yeah, it's just I think this is one of those cards where you play it and you have to play it and plan on it being two turns before it's useful. And if you do that and you're comfortable with that, you're going to be okay.
I feel like it chills. I feel like maybe the first player or two is like, "Well, I'm going to do my instants and sorceries mm-hmm. because that's only going to get it to two, and if anyone else contributes to it, that's their fault."
I would love to deal with those kind of players. Those would be my favorite ones.
Now, I'm going to have my arms doing this, just, and if you get in the way...
Just give me three of those players, and then it's not my fault. We got
one more colorless card here, Mike. Yeah,
the moment. My biggest argument was like, why is River Song's Diary not legendary? It's this one person's diary, and then the next thing that we're talking about is the moment. Two mana for a legendary artifact. At the beginning of your upkeep, put a time counter on the moment. You can pay two mana and tap it to untap target creature you control. Or untap target creature you control. It phases out until the moment leaves the battlefield. All right. Pay three and tap it. Destroy each non-land permanent with a mana value less than or equal to the number of time counters on the moment. Then sacrifice the moment. Activate only as a sorcery. So, this is a combination of a bunch of different things.
It is. We're getting a lot of different effects. We're getting kind of the ratchet bomb. We're getting what's that omen something? You know, those effects mostly in white, but sometimes in colorless yep. that allow you to individually very slowly save things and then blow the board. Mm-hmm. Lots of interesting things going on.
It's a slow Nev's disc that you also get to try mm-hmm. and save stuff. It's very weird.
Well, normally you would do something like it would put a counter on them that marks them as saved. Mm-hmm.
But now you're phasing things out. In this case,
they phase out. Yeah. So even if you never get to the point where you're untapping and activating moment at just the right time to do the thing you want, mm-hmm. If somebody board wipes and the moment is on the field, all of the stuff that you had phased out isn't touched. Yep. And if the moment's destroyed, those come back even.
It's a weird card. I like it. I'd love to have the Sonic Screwdriver to untap this, to untap another card, stuff like that.
There you go.
It's kind of weird.
Use
synergy.
Clock of Omens with the moment.
Yeah, I do like this. It's a weird... I can't see the deck that I would put it in. But I could see it hit the battlefield and be excited to see what's going
to It's good that it exists.
Yeah, exactly. I like the moment. What's your favorite of the ones that we've talked about?
Between red and colorless.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good question. The Sound of Drums is super cool.
It's very cool.
Very cool. If we're talking about cards that might actually find their way into a deck, it's possible that Sonic Screwdriver goes into Emrakul because we have two... big things here. We have untap an artifact, which mm-hmm. artifact decks love. And we have target creature can't be blocked. Emrakul already has that flying trample, the flample. But unblockable. I mean, that's not just for big boys. That's also a political move. So I think Sonic Screwdriver, if there were any card that had a chance of going into one of my decks, it would either be that land, Ominous Cemetery, or maybe Sonic Screwdriver, Mike.
The Midnight Crusader Shuttle is the funniest.
Yeah, that
card.
Seemed really cool as well.
It's the funniest card I've seen in a bit.
He's leaving.
Okay. Did we discuss red, our favorite card there?
I think that the Sound of Drums might just be the coolest one. But
okay.
There's some interesting options in here.
I think the Sound of Drums is the one that I'll use the most. The Ensnared by the Mara is the part that I'm most excited to play by itself.
That one's so cool.
Just I love I'm gonna do a thing, but you pick.
So let's,
because
we've got so many great cards to talk about. Let's move into multicolored.
Yep.
And we'll start with Dimir.
Okay.
Let's start with Blink. Now,
okay,
we need to be really careful with this, and I don't even know if I agree with the way that they designed this, but we're going to point it out.
Oh, okay.
Blink is a saga for 2BB, and we need to look very carefully at those chapter markers, Mike, because those chapter markers go 1, 3, 2, 4.
Oh, shoot.
I know.
I didn't notice. I was so confused.
You're looking right at it. You don't even see it.
I was so confused with what the issue was.
1, 3, 2, 4. Okay. So you have to be very careful. We're going to be jumping back and forth between these two chapters. And I think they just did this so they don't have to print so much text. But I think this will trip a lot of people up. Let's go through it. It's an enchantment saga. It's 2BB, 4 mana. Chapters 1 and 3. Choose target creature. Its owner shuffles it into their library, then investigates. That means they make a clue token. Chapters 2 and 4 create a 2/2 black alien angel artifact creature token with first strike vigilance, and whenever an opponent casts a creature spell, this permanent isn't a creature until end of turn. So we have these effects, but let's talk about how they weave into each other, because we'll go 1, 2, then 3, then 4. So first, we're going to choose a creature, they'll shuffle into their library, they'll investigate, then we'll make a 2/2 black alien artifact angel creature token with first strike vigilance, and whenever an opponent casts a creature spell, this permanent isn't a creature until end of turn. I mean, what that's doing is it's protecting it against removal. Very cool.
Okay.
And then we're going to go back to chapter 3 on the following draw step. We're going to shuffle another creature in, and they'll investigate again. And then if we get to 4, we'll go back to that one. Very interesting design on this one, but I really think it could trip especially newer players up, and even experienced players aren't even going to be paying close enough attention, I think. Just wanted to bring that to the attention. What do you feel about this card?
I get it that it's weird. I get it that they designed it in a strange way, but I also appreciate it, because if they had made choose target, if they had made the shuffle effect,
yeah, if it was 1, 2, then 3, then 4, then yeah,
this is real strong. And you know, the create a 2/2 angel artifact token with flying, or sorry, with first strike vigilance that sometimes doesn't become a creature. Or, yeah.
Whenever opponent casts a creature spell, this permanent isn't a creature.
Yeah, it's, I don't think I love the card. I don't have an issue with it. It's just that I'm only caring about the shuffle effect. The other thing is something that, it just me as a play style, it's too much for me to keep. I don't want to keep track of that.
You're kind of getting overwhelmed by the value.
I don't want to worry about, like, okay, great. I have these two, like, say it goes all the way through. Okay, I have these two angel tokens. First of all, I don't like when an angel token doesn't have flying, because I will always mess
that up. Well, it's an alien name. I will forget. Those are mostly statues.
Sure. I get that now, but in my head, it's a...
No, that's right, fair. I mean, just like when I give people a Forbidden Orchard spirit, they're like, oh, it flies, right?
Yeah,
no, it doesn't.
No, it does not. It's just one of those things. I don't mind it. I love the idea of the, okay, I'm going to shuffle this creature back into your deck, but I'm going to give you a clue. Cool. Hey, something bad, but something good. It's not bad. Don't get me wrong. It's doing more stuff that I don't want to keep track of.
Right. Now, there is a strange case you could do where maybe, I don't know why, but maybe you hit one of your own tokens, shuffle it into your library. It doesn't exist. It doesn't even matter. And then you get a clue token. I don't know. Maybe that's something you want to do for some reason.
Maybe
you could do that to your own angel artifact, if it's still a creature, that is. I don't know. This is a weird one, Mike. Very strange.
It's very strange. Yes. It's Dimir doing Dimir things.
I think the reason why they did it weird like this is because in this episode, which is, you know, based on Don't Blink, the doctor is communicating with some characters whom we've not met before. They're experiencing, you know, the horror of the Weeping Angels. they don't know what's going on. They're just normal folks. And right. and he is explaining to them, but he's not like on a phone call with them. This is a pre-recorded message that they're talking to, and he's talking back because he's mm-hmm. a time traveler and he already knows all their questions.
And he knows.
Yeah, very, yeah. very funny, interesting stuff there.
It's a very cool, like, looking
card. I mean, if you told cool me to design a card based on that episode and it had to involve that sort of weird framing device, I don't know if I could do better than this.
That's fair. I mean, it's called Blink, not Don't Blink. So yeah, the effects of the card makes sense. That's fair. Yeah.
Let's move on to our next Dimir card.
Yeah, Great Intelligence's plan. 4BB for a sorcery. Draw 3 cards. Then target opponent faces a villainous choice. They discard 3 cards, or you may cast a spell from your hand without paying its mana cost.
Mike, man, we've talked cool. about some villainous choices so far. This one is really mean.
See, I don't think that's mean.
You don't think this is mean?
I don't think that's mean. I think I cast this card, and I say, hey, who would allow me to pay something or play something for my hand for free?
And everyone's like, I don't want to do that.
Okay, cool. You're going to discard 3 cards.
No! Like,
I read this as draw 3 cards, play something from your hand for
this
free.
This is like Thought Seizes expertise. Like,
Yeah. I was going to say this is weird Rish cards. So, yeah. This is just a cool card. I like it. Sure. Yeah,
it's more on the expensive side, but you are drawing 3 no matter what. And then you could swing your opponent to minus. Although, geez, they would have to have a pretty thick grip. Or know yep. for a fact that you had a game winner in your hand to be willing to discard 3. I think for the most part, they just give it to you.
And that's where I get into the like the hey, the be honest with what you're trying to do. And I just hey, I'm just trying to get some value out here. I'm not gonna play anything rude.
This and you show it to everybody for free. Yep. Anybody have a problem with that? Anybody yeah. want me to do that?
I'm gonna draw 3 cards and play this. And if I get anything crazy, I'll let you know.
Right. I mean you could draw something even more nuts and play that.
Yeah. Hey, do you want me to show you my hand when I do it? I'll do it. That's fine. Just who's going to let me get
by it? This is just fun stuff there. That's a really cool card.
I like that one. Let's move back up to Boros because the way that we sorted the cards, they're I want to make sure that I don't forget this later. We've got one red-white card here. The first one is Gallifrey Falls. 4RR for an instant. Gallifrey Falls deals 4 damage to each creature. If a creature dealt damage this way would die this turn, exile it instead. We love
powerful
those.
Effect. Yeah,
very powerful effect. But also on the card is No More. 2W for an instant. Any number of target creatures you control phase out. Now those are pretty cool cards. Those are pretty cool singular effects. That's not
Mike, but I mean, choosing between those two, I don't know. But wait. Well,
you don't have to, because this card also has fuse.
It has fuse.
Let's do a fun thing where we try and put as much information and words on a card, but in none of the places that it normally is. At the very on the right side of the card, which is the bottom of the card when you flip this 90 degrees, fuse. You may cast one or both halves of this card from your hand.
Yes.
So. Would you like to do both of these things? Would you like to do 4 damage to each creature and exile them all if they would die? And also phase out all the creatures you or any number of target creatures you control this turn? Cool. Do it. This is a cool card.
I mean, let's be realistic. If you want to fuse this and cast both halves, you're paying 6RR, which is 9 mana. Yep. However, for that cost, you are dealing 4 to everything, and if it dies, it gets exiled, and also none of your stuff gets touched, nor can it be touched, until the beginning of your next upkeep.
Right.
Untap step.
And thankfully, it's one of those like high mana cost things that you can do, but at least you're doing it at instant speed.
And there's a Boros split card that I think is like Wear and Tear.
Something
like that, and it's destroy target artifact, destroy target enchantment. These... I mean, they don't evoke the idea necessarily of a modal spell, but especially with Fuse, this is very modal, Mike. You get to make a choice as to exactly what you want.
Well, just look at it this way. Because I'm looking at this card and I'm saying, okay, I'm putting this in the deck for the no more portion. I am a 3 mana,
yeah, that's pretty solid
speed,
right there.
Any number of target creatures I control phase.
But it also has a board wipe staple to it if you want.
Right. If you don't run into an instant where, hey, I really do need to protect my board, great. Now I'm going to protect my board because I want to destroy it. Bah! I like it. It's a neat little neat little modal spell there. Okay. I like this. Scrolling back down. Why don't you lead me into our next one here?
Yeah, we got a Sycorax Commander. This is not a commander. Just to be clear, this is a non-legendary creature.
Right.
A Sycorax Commander is 2 black-red for a creature soldier alien. It has first strike and haste.
Okay.
Sanctified rules of combat. Okay. When Sycorax Commander enters the battlefield, each opponent faces a villainous choice. Okay.
Yikes.
That opponent discards all cards in their hand, then draws that many cards minus one. So we got a wheel. Or Sycorax Commander deals damage to that player equal to the number of cards in your hand. Vicious Shadows. Cards in their hand, excuse me.
I want to make 40 of these.
This is so cool.
Yeah.
Now, we've talked about wheels and how those kind of sit with us. Wheels can be a great boon to a player. You can, you know, give them a new hand, a new grip of cards, and give them a second lease on the game. Mm-hmm. Or you can kind of completely forcibly mulligan their hand, and now their strategy is obliterated.
Yep.
But for the most part, a lot of the value in a wheel comes from the fact that regardless of what you had, now you have a new grip, whether that's good or bad. Here's the problem with this. Discards cards in your hand that draws that many cards minus one. If they're kind of starting to get a little heck-bent or hell-bent, this is not going to help them at all. This helps them if they have a grip.
Well, okay. It does, but it doesn't.
Because they're going down one.
It's going to help them the most amount that it's capable of helping them either way. Because they're going to make the choice, right?
Yes.
We
love when our opponents make choices.
I think the reason that I like this card and why I want a whole bunch of them is I want to know who holds on to their cards.
Yeah, that's a good point, because
then that's the information that I want. It's who's got something that they're thrilled about.
And then what other devious things can I do?
Right. I like this as a card. The first strike in haste is meaningless to me as far as I'm concerned. But if there's some way that you could do something, and I'm going to give this infect.
Even normally, you're punching in, you're paying 4 mana, you're going to at least be able to punch in for 4.
Yeah. The first strike is big.
Yeah, first strike in haste, very nice.
It's pretty cool.
It's that ETB effect, and making copies, or just in general.
Just recurring.
This is some really villainous value, we'll say.
Yeah.
This is Rakdos right here.
It's pretty solid. Let's go on to Gruul here. Bigger on the inside.
Ooh.
3 red, green for an enchantment aura. Hey, we're talking about green. Enchant artifact or land. Enchanted permanent has tap. Target player adds 2 mana of any one color. The next spell they cast this turn has cascade.
Hello.
Holy cow. I was stuck on why is this a 5 mana enchantment, but I got there. So as a reminder, when they cast the next spell, they exile cards from the top of their library until they exile a non-land card that costs less. They may cast that without paying their mana cost. They may put the exiled card.
Well, I think Cascade is quite flavorful for this. One thing that you may or may not know about the TARDIS, which is effectively the Doctor's starship, is that it contains its own sort of pocket universe.
Dimension,
where kind of thing. The inside is a separate place that need not be physically contained within a small phone booth or police box.
Right.
So bigger on the inside, you're getting that cascade value that you're getting mana, you're getting to cascade. So it is almost like it's bigger on the inside. You're generating more value than what you cast. And you could spend this on your own stuff. And I think most people would. But Mike, what a gift. What a gift to give to another player. Can you imagine?
Well, here's the thing. I can enchant my own stuff.
You can, and then choose target player.
And then choose target player do stuff with it. I love the... I would want this to be on a land 90% of the time.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
If I really want to turn something into a mana rock that isn't necessarily a mana rock, that's cool too on its own.
Yeah, I mean, untapping artifacts and tapping this again, like maybe with your Sonic Screwdriver.
Mm-hmm. No, this is very cool. I'm very much on the, like, I don't know. This is a very cool card. I'm going to put it in a couple of decks.
Let's talk logistics real quick.
Yeah.
So let's say that through some untapped shenanigans that you are able to activate this two times before a player casts another spell. Let's just say that it's you, just for sake of argument.
Yeah.
Let's say you target yourself. You're going to add two mana. The next spell you cast this turn is Cascade. Then you untap, you do it again. You're going to add two more mana. The next spell you cast this turn is Cascade. That means not that the next two spells you cast this turn each have Cascade.
The next turn
or that you cast a spell with Cascade and then that card cascades. It's that the next spell you cast this turn has Cascade.
Then that's part of the reason that I wanted to put this on an artifact.
Right.
Because it's a lot easier for me to untap those. I've got a Sonic Screwdriver.
Exactly. Now, this is just good fun here, and it's an uncommon, so it makes sense it's a little bit overcosted, but, Mike, this doesn't even seem that overcosted.
No, well, it's 5 mana to make something that didn't normally tap for 2 mana, tap for 2 mana.
Right, so you're and immediately also getting benefit. A discount.
I mean, I don't remember I don't remember what the enchantment was that before this, but I think the enchantment that I had in my head that, hey, target land now taps for 2 mana, I think that was a 2 or 3 mana spell by itself. For that enchantment. So
there's a couple of green enchantments that just give you a single extra mana.
Yeah.
But they don't give you Cascade. I'm sorry, that right now.
Right. Yes, that's what I meant. It's very cool. I like that. And again, it's a very cool, it's good on the flavor too. Where
this is very flavorful.
I'm going to do this thing. Oh, I'm going to cast this spell. Oh, it's bigger. Though. It's more than you think.
Right, you get more value than what you put in. I like this card. I think it's, honestly, I don't know if I would have chosen Gruul for this, especially with Enchant Artifacts, and it's a positive effect, and it's in green and red. I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting decision.
In my head, I can see it as red and green because I can see the red part being the artifact in Cascade, and I can see the green part being the land in Cascade. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean, it's not, like, out of the color pie. It just seems a little strange.
Sure. That's fair. Let's stay in this piece of the color pie for now with Wreck and Rebuild.
Yeah.
1 red-green for a sorcery. Choose one. Okay. Choose target artifact or enchantment. Okay. Mill 5 cards. Then you may put a land card from your graveyard onto the battlefield tapped. That's pretty cool. It also has flashback for 3 red-green.
No, I don't mean to call Mike out here. He did misspeak slightly. He said choose target artifact or enchantment. You actually destroy it.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Destroy target artifact or enchantment. Then the other ability is mill 5 cards. Then you may take a land card from your graveyard and put it on the battlefield tap.
Now, destroy target artifact or enchantment for 3 mana is not amazing.
Sure.
But mill 5 and then ramp, that's also okay. Now, again, with modal effects, you can expect to pay a little bit of a premium because you have the options available to you. But what's very nice is that you can get this back and do it again.
Yes.
Only one additional time.
Right. 8 mana for 2 lands is not crazy good.
Right. It's the fact that it has more than you had.
Yes, exactly. All in all, it's not bad. Also, again, cards are always going to win me over with the flavor of the title of the card and what the card actually does. Wreck and Rebuild. What does this card do? It destroys things and it mills things and it gives you land from them. Like, these are the things that it does. Oh, it wrecks and rebuilds things.
Well, that's the interesting thing about it is because it has flashback, this is no longer just spot removal. This is also now a rattlesnake, Mike.
Yep.
Because it'll 100%. Sit in your graveyard, and now you have, well, granted, you have to hold up 5 mana, but people are going to remember that you now have a spot removal spell that you can just kind of throw out there.
Yep.
And that's not nothing.
I'm paying 3 mana to probably do the mill effect, to be honest with you. And more importantly, I'm paying 3 mana for everybody else to figure things out their turn a little bit differently than they would have before.
The nice thing about the mill one is, say that you chose to do that twice, right? Let's say that you did Wreck and Rebuild, you milled 5, you ramped a land. And then you flash it back and you milled 5 and you ramped a land. Because you have milled 5 the first time and milled 5 the second time, maybe you milled 2 lands the first time and you didn't mill any the second time. That's okay.
Okay.
Now you can get a land maybe that was already in your graveyard and have even less of a chance of whiffing.
And don't get me wrong, there are more efficient ways for me to mill.
Oh, very much so.
If I want to.
Very much
so. But this isn't bad, you know, as far as options and everything.
You're going to pay a little bit more for modal, and it isn't uncommon. But,
yep.
I mean, this is... I think this is solid. This is kind of what green and red wants to do. And I don't know if this is like a meat and potatoes card. I think this is a good vegetable because you've got the spot removal and the ramp.
Yeah.
Now you don't have to include, I mean, it counts for both categories as far as I'm concerned.
Sure. Sure. It's situational, but there's nothing wrong with situational
cards. Not every card has to be a flashy 10 mana, blow everything up, win the game.
You need to stop saying blasphemous things to me. I don't appreciate that. Okay.
Let's talk about Curse of Fenrir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Curse of Fenrir. Two green white for three chapter saga. Chapter one, for each player, destroy up to one target creature that player controls. For each creature destroyed this way, its controller creates a 3/3 green mutant creature token with Death Touch.
Terastodon!
Huh. Terastodon with Death Touch. That's pretty neat. Chapter 2. Target non-token creature becomes a 6/6 legendary horror creature named Fenrir and loses all abilities.
Oh.
Okay. I love it! Sorry, everybody. I'm reading this card for the first time. Chapter 3. Target mutant fights another target creature named Fenrir. Alex, I'm going to laugh for a bit. Talk about this card.
It's a little wacky. Okay. Well, we got three things happening. First thing is one of my favorite things to do. We've got our Beast Within. We've got our Generous Gift, our Terastodon, Assassin's Trophy. You know what I'm talking about. Spot removal that gets rid of something and gives a little something back. And in this case, it's more than a little something. Mike, this is a 3/3 with Death Touch. That is not a small gift. That's like we all agreed that our gifts would be $20 limited and you went in $50.
Yeah.
That's not okay.
Also, it's up to, and you can choose yourself. So
that's how many true. It's like, ones are kind of worthless. What if I pump them up?
I would like this 1/1 to be a 3/3 death with touch, please. Yeah,
exactly. and then we have number two. Now, this is a little bit tricky, right? Because we're making a non-token creature. It's into its 6/6, legendary horror creature named Fenrir, and loses all abilities. So we have these two things happening. It's becoming... big, maybe. Maybe it was small, becomes big. We're setting its power and toughness equal to 6/6. But it also loses all abilities, so we're also getting a Kenrith's transformation thing going on here. So yes, it has the potential to be a scary thing, and I think that's the idea. But it also has the potential to be this very pacifying, humiliating thing, where maybe that's their commander, and sure, it's a 6/6, but now it can't do any of the things that
it's a 6/6 that does nothing
exactly.
Else.
So it's crippled in that way. But then we have this just very wacky third chapter ability that has just sent Mike into a excellent place of mind. A target mutant fights target Fenrir, right?
Yeah.
So
and here's the thing. When I was looking at this, I was
it's
like, going to
kill it, Mike, because that mutant has Death Touch.
Well, and the best part of this is because the first effect is for each player, destroy up to one target creature that player controls, I can easily target myself. I can easily make sure that if this sticks around, I'm going to be able to do something with it. Mm-hmm. Also, the fact that it's 4 mana, destroy... If this card said 4 mana, destroy 3... Or each of your opponents destroys a creature, give them a 3/3 with Death Touch. If that's all the card did, it'd still be useful. The fact that you can, on the second chapter, I'm going to take something that is a problem and make it less of a problem, potentially, and then I'm going to remove that problem, is very cool.
That is very cool. And the nice thing about it, right, is that, you know, we've talked, even in this episode, we talked about how these later chapters, you might never reach them. You might never get that value. With this, that's really okay. I mean, if you're turning something into a 6/6 with no abilities, and then we lose the saga, and oh no, we can't destroy it anymore, I don't think they're that much happier. I think now they just they have a big dumb 6/6 with nothing going on. I don't think that's that big of a deal, Mike.
No, and Commander, you can get 6/6s just by letting them fall out of the sky. So
this is such a fun saga. There's so many sagas this set.
I do like this. This is very
cool. There is a Lesnia.
Let's go to Izzet. Why don't you talk to me about our next card here?
Okie dokie. Let's talk about Heaven Sent. Lots of people talking about this card. This is blue-red, 2 mana for an enchantment saga. And first two chapters, it says investigate, right? You're going to make a clue artifact token. It has pay 2 generic mana and sacrifice steal, draw a card. It also has chapter 3. Heaven Sent deals 1 damage to each opponent. Then if an opponent has 0 or less life, draw 7 cards. Otherwise, exile Heaven Sent and you may cast it this turn.
Oh.
This is not supposed to be splashy, although the sequence this is referencing is quite famous and is a very splashy sequence that I won't really get into. But I think in my mind, I'm seeing this as a low mana cost enchantment. It's a saga that churns out that value every turn. You're going to make a clue token, which is great. And then every third turn, you're going to ping. I have a feeling, Mike, that a lot of is it decks. Number one, they like to draw cards, right? Sure. You're in blue and red. You love card draw. In fact, there's a decent chance your commander cares about card draw. But then you also have this pinging effect that if it just so happens to kill somebody, which probably it won't, but if it does, you'll draw 7. That's just gravy. But it's pinging. Sure. I have an Is It Pinger deck. This is my Ningrupug ping deck. And I don't know if this goes into it, but I have got to say that I really appreciate the 2 mana value on this, where just every turn, you're just making that investigate, or you do a ping. I think this is just a low-key card that is going to churn that value out for you, Mike.
Well, and you said, you know, is it decks? They like to draw cards. They like to ping.
I think every deck likes to do that.
They all like to do that. But is it decks, more than a lot of decks, also like to have artifacts. More artifacts to show up.
And they also like spell slinging. You get to cast this again from exile, no less.
Right. And again, what's the most that this card is ever going to cost you in a turn? Right? Like, it's 2 mana.
Well, this is very interesting. I make a clue. It's right? 2 mana. Let's talk about this. A lot of sagas, we just would kind of ignore this. But when the saga enters, you're going to go to chapter 1 and do it. And then when it hits the final chapter, you're going to resolve that in sacrifice. But if we look at it this way, you play it chapter 1, you investigate. Mm-hmm. Next turn after that, chapter 2, and you investigate. Next turn after that, chapter 3, you ping, and then you may recast it. You're going to get chapters 3 and 1 on the same turn if you want to, which that means that you're getting those clue tokens that much faster, and the churning value is not even as slow as it looks then.
Exactly. This is a 2 mana, make a clue.
There's never a turn where it's like, oh, I only get pings this turn. No, you'll always get a ping and a clue if you want.
No, I like it. I like it a lot. It is a...
This is some compact value.
Yeah. It's not powerful.
No.
It's synergistic.
Yes.
You're doing this because you're doing other stuff. And heck, 2 mana, make a clue. 2 mana, make a clue. Do 1 damage. 2 mana, make a clue. Like, that's fine.
Right, and pinger decks, like, you know, one damage, you might think, oh, that's nothing. But we talked about this with Life Lost decks. Even the fact that you're dealing any amount of damage, or an opponent loses any amount of life, that can be the synergy in your deck that's like, oh, well, an opponent took damage, so now this and this happens.
Yes. It's very cool. I like Heaven Sent. It's a smart effect on a card. Without me going crazy because, too strong.
Yeah.
So, next one here. Another 2 mana is it card. Run for your life. Blue red for an instant. 1 or 2 target creatures each gain haste until end of turn. They can't be blocked this turn except by creatures with haste. And it also has escape. That's been a while. For 2 blue red, exile 4 other cards from your graveyard, and then you'd be able to do it again. That's pretty solid. I'm going to make 2 creatures.
I'm just immediately thinking of an opponent is playing something juicy, but it doesn't have haste. So now it has haste and it's unblockable.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, buddy, go nuts.
I would like it to be. Yeah. Yeah. Get at him. No, this is cool.
Or maybe.
This is very
like
cool.
Like a commander, right? Like my Nin that has an activated ability, but it doesn't have haste. So granting it haste is not letting it attack per se. It's letting it activate its ability immediately.
Sure. Yeah. Two mana. For giving something haste and upside is totally fine.
This is solid, and I think it's appropriately costed as well.
Yes, I agree. I agree. The escape clause, it's very similar to what we were talking about with Wreck and Rebuild. Just having that flashback on there and knowing that it's something
this becomes a rattlesnake in your graveyard. Nice.
Yeah.
Like, listen,
it's pretty cool.
The next time somebody plays something juicy and they want to swing it at someone who's not me, just hit me up, baby.
Yeah. Let's talk.
Cool stuff there.
Last one, and I'm glad it's the last one because it has some of our favorite words in it. Truth or consequences.
Or consequences.
Not our favorite words, but they soon might be. Two blue red for a sorcery that has secret castle.
Okay, those are my two favorite words.
Yeah. Each player secretly votes for truth or consequences. Then those votes are revealed. You draw cards equal to the number of truth votes. Then you choose an opponent at random. Truth or consequences deals 3 damage to that player for each consequence.
Oh my god.
That's so fun!
Let's just gush for a moment, Mike. First of all, secret console. Secret console. We love it. But now we have a game theory gambit happening that is going to make players' brains spin around in their head, right? Because what's going on here? Each player is going to secretly vote. Right. When we have each player secretly voting, we've talked about this. Basically, what they'll do is they'll write it down. That's the safest way to do it. Or we can say everybody obscures a die behind their hand. And if it's one, then it's this. Sure. If it's two, it's this. Well, however you want to do it. Each player will secretly vote. But players are allowed to say whatever they want about how they're voting prior to revealing it. They could say lie about how they voted. And that is okay. Might not be okay ethically, but it's okay for the rules.
Right.
But how are they going to vote, Mike? Because let's say that everybody is afraid and they vote that you draw the cards. You get a bunch of card draw. But let's say that people don't want you to draw cards, but maybe they're concerned about how many people might also not want you to draw cards, and then the consequences get built up and maybe they get lasered by it, or maybe they're like, it's probably not going to hit me. There's so many different thought patterns. It's very much almost like I said game theory. It's very much a game theory style card. There's no easy answer to this one, is there?
Sure. Well, and you say there's no easy one. My first thing was, it's each player. I don't know if I'm voting truth or consequence if I'm casting
this thing. I think that I vote for the cards for me.
See, I understand that. I think I would probably vote for the consequences because I think it depends on the table that you're at, right?
Right.
And how many people are still there.
This one synergizes well with other voting synergy cards, and we've talked about this. I would love to see just a secret counselor voting deck and just build that. That'd be so cool. Mm-hmm. But if you play one of those esoteric voting cards that says you'll get an additional vote, normally that's just like, I'm going to put my finger on the scale. But for this one, that's either an extra card or an extra 3 damage, Mike.
Right. And here's the thing. If this is, okay, say it's the beginning of the game, so there's, you know, people aren't super worried about damage.
Yeah.
Okay. 4 mana for 4 cards. Good value.
Very good.
3 mana, 3 cards for 4 mana and 3 damage to a player.
Decent.
Still pretty good value. 4 mana for 2 cards and 6 damage to another player.
Not bad.
Still not bad.
4 mana, four mana for 1 card. 9 damage.
9 damage.
That's not bad. 4 mana not go bad. Down a card and 4 deal
mana
12.
12 damage. Still good.
Right. This is another one of those cards where, like I said, the more votes, but also the more people in the pod, that just makes it better and better.
I just want to play this in a Kingdoms game where there's...
I know, I should build a deck that's like, this deck players. Is good when you have 6 or more people in the game.
Yeah.
Because it's all of those cards that are like, for each person who voted this way, you do this.
Truth or consequences.
First of all, if you ever are curious as to how big our little sort of community is, people who are like us and you, listener, people who like this social contract stuff that we always love to talk about, that we built this whole podcast community around. If you ever wonder, well, how many people are actually like us, but maybe we haven't met them yet? Probably not too many, Mike, because this card's 35 cents.
We're not the majority.
We're not the majority, but that's okay. There are dozens of us.
See, that one actually surprises me because, again, the floor on this card It's still pretty... like
that's a good breakdown, Mike. I wouldn't have thought about it personally that way, and I think I would have eschewed the idea of three damage being any amount of value. But you put it a good way, and really, regardless of how it breaks down, I think you get your mana's worth.
Even if there's... if there are two... if there are three players total in the game, I still think this is a very cool card.
Hmm.
When it's you versus one other person...
yeah, then it's...
that, ooh, yeah. I totally get it at that point.
Yes. 1v1, not so much.
But if it's you versus one other person, that means that you've been playing long enough for two people to get knocked out of the game. It is a good chance that that other person is not sitting there at 40 life.
That's a good point.
If they're sitting at, say they're doing well and they're still sitting at 20 at this point. Six damage is a quarter of their health, easy.
Once it's down to one opponent, they know that if they vote consequences, they're 100% taking the damage because it's an opponent chosen at random.
Right. So at that point, it's okay, so now do I want to do three damage, or do I want to draw two cards?
Exactly.
And that's pretty cool. All right, that does it for the 99. We're rolling, my guy.
I know, Mike. We had to break up our 99 episode into two different episodes because this set is so bountiful with politics.
Yep. And we're not even talking about all of the most powerful cards. We're just talking about the most, this is fun, I want it.
Exactly, right. There are so many cards in this set that are just super cool and synergistic for Commander, and that's awesome. If you saw those cards, maybe that green dinosaur one, and you're like, why didn't you and Mike talk about this?
Well, everybody's talking about that.
Everyone's talking. If you want to head over to the EDH Reccast, you want to head over to our good friends at Rachel Weeks. We have a lot of great friends, DJ Jumbo Commander. Great people. I'm sure that they have done set reviews for Doctor Who or written articles about it. Please go read their stuff if you want to read about those kinds of cards. But if you want to hear about the social cards, you know exactly where you are.
Yeah, it's these are weird cards. And they're weird cards.
I like jank.
And that's the thing. We call it jank, we call it weird, and really what we need to call it is just like, hey, these are cards that do
social.
So they're interaction cards.
Yes.
And it's not board interaction, it's pod interaction. And that's pretty cool.
You know, I feel a little bad for those mono green players, but I don't feel too bad because every other color just made out like Bennett's. White had the highest number of cards that we talked about this time. It was previous episode, but we talked about 11 white cards, Mike.
Well, don't get too ahead of yourself here, Alex, because we're going to be back pretty soon here.
We're going to talk about some legends that can be in your command zone. Maybe some doctors, maybe some doctor companions. Lots of interesting commanders for this set, Mike.
I'm pretty excited about it. Hopefully all of you are as well. We're going to be signing off here, and we'll get that one to you as soon as possible. Until then.
If you would like to find me online, you can find me at Twitter, at Lappermedic, LAPPERMEDIC. If you heard about some of these cards, maybe you're thinking, could that go infinite? Could that win me the game? Head over to CommandersSpellbook.com and find all sorts of fun Doctor Who infinite combos there.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you enjoyed our conversation, you can go into the show notes for our Discord link and talk with us, talk with a bunch of like-minded people on some of the cool stuff that you can do to interact with the pod, as opposed to just the board, as well as the board itself, because, I mean, let's be real, that's the game.
And if you want to support our podcast,
you can go to our Patreon at patreon.com/thesocialcontractEDH, or you can search for The Social Contract in their search bar. There's lots of different tiers that you can join at and give you different kind of motivations in the Discord server as well as get a special shout out in our show notes. And we appreciate all of you for listening, and we definitely appreciate our patrons for keeping the lights on and taking care of us. I went through a coughing fit there, so I'm going to get to do a lot of decent little chunks of editing towards the end here. But after I recover, I'll drink a whole lot of water. I'll gargle some salt water, things along those lines. And then Alex and I will be back. We'll get to talk about the legendary.
I'm so excited for all these legends.
I haven't looked at one. I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited to share them with Mike.
Hooray! And then we get to share them with all of you. Until then, we'll talk to you soon.